Blog Talk Radio.
You're announcing yourself, right?
Yes. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist, and we come to you live every Thursday from 7 into 8, and here we are. It is 7 o'clock, and we are creative in alchemy. So I am the alchemist. Alchemy is all about transformation and transforming lead into gold, bringing out the power, the essence of what you never knew you had. And we have a creative, and my co-host is the creative. In a second, I will introduce her. And we take on business topics. The Creative Alchemist is all about creativity, transformation within a business context. So we always have great guests, and our guests have backgrounds in leadership, finance, accounting, business planning, project management, and we've even had shows dealing with your health, of course, in this kind of pandemic environment. Tonight, we are going to have a very special guest. This guest, man, this guest is awesome. This guest is so awesome, I don't even think I can do justice introducing. So, as always, I will let Lori introduce our guest. I'm going to take a step back so I can kind of hear things through. And I never take this journey alone. My co-host is Lori. Lori, let them know you're here.
So, hi, it's Lori Miller, LGC Interior Designs. And Ted is right. I am the creative. And one of the reasons that I thought we should have this podcast is because I understand how hard it is to run a business. And I did not know what went into a business when I started. So Ted was my business coach, and we've been working together, and I thought it was a great idea for everybody to kind of hear experts or people who are good at what they do and people who have made their businesses successful and glean some information. So
tell them what your business, Lori, tell them what your business is and your old day job also while you're at it.
So my business is I'm an interior designer and residential and commercial spaces, but I used to run the psych unit and I used to run the crime victims program for the Queens DA. So it was a bit of a transition learning how to run a business as someone who always worked for somebody else. So this is, I've been mentioning over the last 10 weeks, this is the last week of the leukemia fundraiser. I'm running for Woman of the Year. We were supposed to have an event tonight. Unfortunately, we were not able to hold the space. But if you'd like to make a donation at LGC Interiors or at LGC Interior Design, or I think on LinkedIn, it's just my name, Lori Miller. The information, just click the link and you can donate from $1, $1,000, whatever you want. Every little bit helps in the fight against cancer. So, and for those who have donated or supported or purchased a ticket to one of our events, thank you so much for helping. And we appreciate your help in the fight. So tonight, Ted was very, very humble in announcing himself. We're going to interview Ted himself. He has a new book out called Here's Why You Can't Find Love. Now, you want to know what that has to do with business. And I thought that was really important and why one of the reasons we should interview Ted. So I'm just going to give a little bit of information. And in case you didn't know, percentage of the employee population is headed for a divorce, in the middle of one or just coming out of it. And in a Divorce Answered article, they say people dealing with divorce have a 50 to 75% decline in their workplace performance. So how do we solve this dilemma? What do we do with it? How do you sabotage your career and personal relationships? And to help solve this dilemma, Ted wrote his book, Here's Why You Can't Find Love. So, Ted, tell us a little bit about your book, your other podcast, which is also about relationships, and how this book came to be.
Oh, boy.
And answer that phone call, because it could be someone purchasing a new book.
No, that's actually a client. He was supposed to call me, but anyway, I'll call him back. So the book,
all right.
Here's Why We Can't Find Love. Here's what's interesting. I wrote this book. It was completed in July of 2018, and I waited. And my profession has been for the past a long time has been to I'm in the business of producing miracles, and I work CEOs of middle market companies hire me, and that was one right there. They hire me when they're looking to produce a breakthrough and they're not sure how to do it with existing resources. And a breakthrough is a quantum leap, is producing a result that you don't know how to do, except once it's accomplished, it alters the future of your company forever. And you could say the iPod was a breakthrough for Apple Computer. They went from just selling computers to now selling listening devices that made the Walkman obsolete, and then they went to cell phones. And it altered Apple Computer and its business model forever. So I work with companies that are looking to produce that kind of breakthrough, and it always requires transforming corporate culture so that the culture of the organization doesn't kill off the new strategy. And you hear a lot of consultants say culture eats strategy any day. So if your culture is toxic or it's not healthy, and you want to bring on something the company's never done, somehow the people figure out how to kill that initiative. And in corporations, most breakthrough initiatives fail. So that's been my work. And it, you know, it revolves very much around mindset, and it's the human aspect of your company. And, you know, so I have a couple of concerns. In corporations, we're doing a lot to try and make people more machine-like, and we're trying to make machines more human-like. Right? That doesn't make sense. So in writing the book, part of the reason I held out is I created a podcast called Straight Talk, and it is a talk show that is made for men by men, and I wanted men to have a place to be able to talk about complex and intimate things that men think about and be able to speak it in a man's voice. And also at the same time, being a great place for women who want to understand what men really think. And I do that show every Sunday. So in doing the podcast, it really helped me. On this show, we talk about transferring skills. And so I was basically transferring my corporate training skills into more of a personal relationship, transforming people and their love relationships. So I wrote a book that sort of combines the two. And Lori was talking in the beginning about something that happens in corporations. And there's a relationship between your love life and corporate America. And that is, most people don't know this, corporate America is losing $300 billion, that's billion, a year in workplace productivity because of divorce. And if you think about it, especially in a large company, corporation, a percentage of your population is headed for divorce, another percentage is in the middle of it, and another percentage just got out of a divorce. And divorce is very distracting, especially if it's an ugly one. Now, on the flip side, couples that have very healthy relationships at home are much better at resolving conflict at work and are more effective communicators at work. So that's telling you that there are skills that are transferable. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a book so that people could actually develop skills that are transferable to both home and work. And so the book talks about how people have blind spots in their communication and how they relate to their client and how communication can be ineffective, how people sabotage. And then I provide tools for people who want to create great relationships. So And the way this book is written, it's based on a real event. It's myself and five women who really interview me and pull out a lot of things from me. So myself, five women, I was at an event. There were many more than five women earlier in the evening, and everyone left, so it was myself and five women. And we had a great conversation, and they suggested I write the book. And so here we are, and I'm gonna stop right there, Lori, because I can speak for an hour or so.
Yes, we do that. But very interesting. I'd like to know some of the questions that they asked you and how you were interviewed.
Well, it started off with a simple question: what do you want from a woman? And I answered that simply as love, affection, and acknowledgement. And I told them what each of those meant. And they were like, wow, I never heard a guy say that. He wrote about this. And so then I went on and I talked about some things that a lot of people will find extremely counterintuitive, probably have a lot of pushback. The book does a great job of helping people understand something that's so counterintuitive that you've probably never heard it. And I'll tell you what that one of those things is in the book. I talk about how trust is not good for your relationship. And, you know, you're a mental health expert. Have you ever heard someone say, kill trust in your relationship, just kill it. You don't want it in the relationship.
No.
So you can imagine I'm telling women, kill trust. And they're like, you're crazy. You know, you're out of your mind. You don't know what you're talking about. So we go back and forth. And what I said to them is trust never travels alone. And so there are two problems when you depend on trust. One is you're depending on something outside of the relationship to make the relationship work. Two, since trust doesn't travel alone, trust has a faithful companion that's always there just waiting around the corner to step in and take over from trust. Do you have any idea what that faithful companion is?
Nope.
Take a guess. It's always there.
I have
there.
No idea.
Trust is there, and it never, like the American Express card, doesn't leave home without it.
Mistrust?
Exactly.
Okay.
So imagine you're depending on trust and wow, things are great. We have a great relationship. I trust him. He trusts me. And then there's a misunderstanding. There's a little crack. Something isn't going the way you anticipated. And this trust says, no, trust, step aside. My turn to handle this. And now instead of your relationship being run by trust, it's being run by mistrust.
Mm-hmm.
So if you kill trust, mistrust dies with it. So now you don't ever have to worry about trust or mistrust. Now you depend strictly on the two of you. And what that comes down to is your word and your integrity. Honoring your word is yourself. Like, my word is my bond. If I said I will do it, I will do it. If I said I will stop doing it, or I said I will not do it, it's done. You don't even have to question. And a lot of people think, oh, well, if you keep your word, then you can trust the person. No, you kill trust. You take it out back. You shoot it in the head. You leave it to die. Let the vultures eat it. And now you have no trust. You have no mistrust. And now you're not depending on anything outside of your word.
Okay.
That's it.
Interesting.
And what it does is it creates a level of freedom and power. So imagine you never have to think whether you trust the person. They said they will do it. Now, if they're a person who lacks integrity, that's going to show up and you might have a decision to make.
Right.
So, and if, let's say you're going to meet somewhere at 5 o'clock and there's traffic, you know, we live here in the New York metro area, lots of traffic.
Right.
So we have cell phones. As soon as you know you're not going to make it at 5, call and let the person know.
Right.
Now imagine in the workplace where everyone just honors their word. We have a project. It's due at 3 o'clock on Thursday. And something happened Wednesday evening that's going to interrupt that. We've got to let everyone know. Or let's say 2 weeks ago when we were assigned the project and they
right.
said it's due in 2 weeks, Thursday at 3, integrity is to say we can't do that. You know, we have these
mm-hmm.
other conflicting projects. There's no way we're going to get, you know, if we're going to have integrity and keep our word, it won't happen.
Right.
So then you have a negotiation. Okay, well, what are the things that you need to get off your plate? Or can you have it for me Monday at 9? There's some negotiation so that you have realistic timelines. So instead of
okay.
saying, I trust you, you'll get it done by Thursday at 3, and no one can say anything, and they can't say no, so they just say, sure, boss, yep, and they already know. Now they're figuring out what excuse they're going to use instead of working on a project or
right.
having the integrity to say, hey, that's going to be difficult. We've got to talk about this.
Right. So with that, we have a caller. The area code is 870. Caller, if you want to identify yourself.
Hey, I'm Don.
870, you're live and on the air with the Creative Alchemist. What's your name and where are you calling from?
It's your boy, Kennedy. I'm just calling to just check in and see how y'all doing.
Hey, all right. Thanks for calling in, Kendrick.
Thank you for calling in.
All right, no problem.
That's great. Any questions for Ted?
Not at the moment. I just need to get caught up on speed.
Okay. All right.
Okay. All right. Well, you can just listen, and I'll put you in. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, just keep them on hold. That's all.
Yeah, exactly.
Correct.
So here's how the book relates to corporate America. So there are studies that show when people are going through divorce, their productivity drops anywhere from 50 to 75%. Imagine that you're paying people their normal wages and they're giving you 50 to 75% less work, all because they're dealing with a divorce. People who can afford it, I know people who took off for a year, just didn't work so that they could recalibrate their lives and get their heads together. So for those who
right.
can't take off, that's what's happening. So, and there are some CEOs who were asked to step down because they didn't think the CEO would be able to deal with the chaos of a divorce and run the company very well. So, you know, this is a serious problem. And when this organization looked at that, they looked at divorce and they looked at dating and cohabitation and factored in when those breakups happen, it has the same impact as a divorce in lowering productivity. So I wrote the book because it deals with conflict resolution, effective communication, networking, negotiation. I mean, all of these things that you need in relationships, you also need at work. And so imagine you have a department or an entire company. Well, let's just say a department and the 20 people in the department all say, we're going to kill trust. Our word is our bond. This is how we work. If we get delayed with anything, we let everyone know, or the interested parties, we let them know immediately. That increases productivity in the workplace. Now, if people can learn skills on how to resolve conflict more effectively, become more better communicators, clearer on their vision and what they want to accomplish with their significant other, they can take these skills from work and bring them home and have better marriages. And people with happier marriages are better employees. And we can reduce the divorce rate. Right now, we accept the divorce rate's about 53%. We accept that as normal. And, you know, even if you look into the gay community, they have divorce also. So same-sex marriage did not eliminate divorce.
No, it did not.
That's why I wrote the book, Lori.
Ah, very good. So you said a few things that I don't know if everybody knew or knows or knew what they are. So you were talking about culture, right? So I guess, to the everyday average Joe, could be Jane, could be Dean, but, culture is more indigent to, a group of people, like the culture of, being raised as Jewish or the culture of being raised as Italian or, we think of the stereotypes when we think of culture.
Right.
But you're
right.
Talking about a different type of culture. Could you explain that? Because I think that also, from a mental health perspective, I think that plays in the role of communication.
Okay. So I won't use my thought on culture. I'll use the experts, social anthropologists. They say that a culture is a network of conversations. So if you can understand that your culture of your country, of your the town you live in, the company you work for, and even the family that you're raising or you grew up as a part of, what are the conversations people have in that group? And that includes at work, that includes the conversations that no one says in the meeting. They talk about it at the water cooler. It also includes the things that people believe they can't say. Like, so we have a culture where we can't talk about certain things. So it's all of these things that we say about the company, what we say about ourselves in a company. I've had clients that told me their culture was toxic. It was they said the black plague or cancer. And anyone who comes here to work, no matter how good they are, they eventually catch the plague and they become like the rest of us. That's a conversation.
Wow.
Well, there are probably more. I've heard more than one company use those exact words.
Wow. I guess that also plays, if you're unhappy at home, you're unhappy in the workplace. If you're unhappy in the workplace, it makes being at home very difficult, right?
Right, right.
So do you think that plays into the part of the, poor relationship or the divorce rate or all of that?
That's a really good question. No one's ever asked me that. So, right. So imagine if you have a company with 1,000 people and half of your employees, 500, are dealing with divorce. They're either headed for one, in the middle of it, or just came out of it. That's half of them.
Right.
What are the
right.
conversations they're going to have? Like, I suck. I just got a divorce. My spouse sucks. Men suck. Women suck. They're going to have some conversation they brought home. And it's
right.
not like people are bananas that you peel it off and go to work and then put it back on when you go home. You are
no.
who you are. And in fact, and I address this in a book, you're the same person when you go to work and when you go home. The difference is at work, they have etiquette. You're trained to have what's called professional behavior. But no one's trained.
Unless you work in a jail.
Right, right. But no one's trained to have, there's no real etiquette in relationships. People say, well, I'm giving you my true self. And it's like, wow, so your true self is is pretty ugly, but everyone at work gets the great side of you, and you come home and give me the lousy side. So if you are dealing with a divorce, the same company, 1,000 people, they're having some negative conversations about life, about relationships, and everything at work is a relationship. And if there's anyone at work who reminds you of your wife or ex-wife or your husband or ex-husband, you may not have much affinity for them.
Right.
So yes, that now you have a culture. So, and that's the other thing. Culture is the conversations you bring to the company. When HR or the hiring manager hires you, they don't know you're having all these conversations with yourself.
Right.
So you're bringing them in the company, and now, so imagine you have two people, two men. One man has a great relationship with his spouse, and the other guy has a horrible relationship, and they're both bringing that to the company, and it's now being sort of infused into the corporate culture.
Right.
It's not malicious. It's just you're bringing who you are.
Right.
Or if you're, let's say you're single and you, you have disdain in any way for the opposite sex, that's going to affect how you engage them at work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is so true.
And now you have a culture. You end up with the battle of the sexes at work, and now you're supposed to make that work. And people withhold information. Just like, so you asked, what were the questions the women asked? And the first one was, what do you want from a woman? And I said, love, affection, and acknowledgement.
Right.
People withhold information, parts of projects. They withhold it at work. Then they go home, and they have the same mindset of withholding love, affection, and acknowledgement, or they play tit for tat. And so that becomes who they are. So they play tit for tat at work. They're just a little more covert about it. And at home, they're a little more overt about it.
Right.
You hear terms like passive aggressive.
Yes. That.
Right.
So now you're going around and this is now part of your coaching, right? So in terms of opening the lines of communication, because I'm sure these are some of the questions that you were also asked, right? Because that was one of the things that you wanted was the love and the affection.
Right.
Right? So you're teaching this. I mean, you're going up in front of corporations and companies, and this is your thing, right? This is what you've noticed. This is what you've worked for. This is what you've taken statistics on, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So with that, what would you want people to know? What do you incorporate? What do you think is important about this? I mean, I'm kind of asking the same question, just in different ways.
Well, the other thing that I said in the book is just give the other person what they want. Like, why would you deny? Like, here's a person that you're claiming you want to have what's called a love relationship. And in the book, I question whether people really truly understand what love is. So, and I talk about how people may have have ideas about love that are that really have nothing to do with love. I'll just say it like that.
Or my idea may be very different than yours.
Right, exactly. And what influenced you contrasted with what influenced the other person, and both people think their idea is right, so now you have a clash of two people. So,
all right, very much so.
So, but essentially, I say give the person what they want. So, with the women, I said a woman should just give a man what he wants. And they were like, oh, so what, a relationship is only about the man? He's the only one who wants? No. The man should give her what he wants. But here's the deal. This goes to your question in communication. If you're unwilling to communicate what you want, what you need from the person, you don't give them the chance to say whether they can do it or not.
Right.
So, and I think there's a problem. For one, a lot of people don't know what they want. They can tell you what they don't want. And the other part is a lot of people will not tell you what they want because maybe they believe they can't get it. They haven't gotten it before.
Right.
There's this culture around life. Like, life is hard and you don't get what you want in life. So don't ask. Just be lucky if you get it. So people won't ask for what they want. Or sometimes what the person wants is not what the other person is willing to give, so they just never reveal it.
Right, or they don't know how.
Well, if they think the person won't give it to them, right? So that, an obvious thing is, like, a woman wants a lot of a guy's money, and he's not willing to give her a lot of his money. So she finds some overt way to get it from him, and she'll never tell him. Well, that's – I'm really here. What was that Cuba Gooding and Tom Cruise movie, Show Me the Money?
Right. Yeah.
Show Me the Money. I forget the name of that movie. So if she's just like, look, I'm just here for the money.
Right.
He doesn't know that.
Right.
And maybe some guys will say, well, sure, what does that look like? How much are we talking? And maybe say, well, I can do that. I can afford that, sure. But we need to talk about, okay, you want the money, got it. So there's something I need to get in return for this if we're going to do it that way. So let's talk about it. But if she never says that,
he doesn't know that, then it's not communicated.
Right, and maybe he says, look, I can't do that if that's what you want. I can't afford that. I know someone who said, hey, I can't afford that. You're asking me to spend this kind of money, and let me show you my budget, and this is what I make, and blah, blah. And they were just belligerent, like, I don't care. That's what I want. And the relationship had to end.
Right. Yeah, because it becomes, you're asking someone to do something they can't do.
Correct. So in this.
Very interesting. So, Ted, how can people get your book?
Well, they can find it on Amazon and Kindle, and there's something called Kobo. And
Kobo?
Yeah, I never heard of it. K-O-B-O. I'm not sure, but Barnes & Noble. So anywhere digital books are sold, I see it all over, the internet. I've seen it in several places. But, of course, on Amazon, Kindle, Barnes & Noble, yes. And if they wanted a signed copy, they could actually get a hold of me. Email T, like Ted Santos, S-A-N-T-O-S, @ turnaroundip.com, and IP is like intellectual property. And if you shot me an email, we could work out how to get that book to you signed for me personally. Are you contacting me through Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, any of those social media platforms?
So, an interesting side note, and I saw the publisher, sneak peek of the book cover. You want to tell us a little bit how you got your book published?
Well, we actually had a woman on our show who's a publisher, and I essentially interviewed her for my book. She didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
She was on the show, and we interviewed her, and she brought her graphic designer and, I guess, a client. And the three of them were on our show together. And so I interviewed her, and I guess about a week after she did our show, I told her I had a book. I sent it to her, asked her what she thought, And she said she would publish it.
And what do we call that, Ted?
Networking?
No. Well, partly. Communication.
Effective. I have a book. Well, yeah.
Right? It was effective communication. It was, you do this. Let me ask you some questions. I need this. How does that work?
Right?
So yes. You were using your own principles.
Correct. And go ahead. Keep going.
No, I was going to say, so, you know, and, you know, Stacey is also, you know, very excels at business. You're a business coach. So, you know, that communication piece is so important. So if people are finding it difficult to communicate, get their needs met, if you find yourself, like, looking in a different place or not getting what you want or stuck in a position, then they might want to reach out and get some assistance with that as well.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes people just in life, it's not just their relationship, it happens at work. They're not always good at articulating clearly what they want. And it's almost like you're making a request. And this is part of my work. You're making a request. And a powerful way to make a request is I have a request, ABC, and I'm willing to promise XYZ.
Right.
So most people just come with their hands out. And if you make that promise and request that way, the person might counteroffer and say, well, I can't do it the way you said. Here's what I can do. And you may come to some terms that are realistic for both of you. So it's not even – and I know people will say a win-win, and I'm not thinking in terms of win. I'm thinking more in terms of what's in the best interest of everyone involved so no one has a bad taste in their mouth.
Right. Yeah, which is also, you know, very important. You have to think of the other person. And it's a back and forth dialogue. What was that game that you used to play when you were kids, right? And there would be teams and you pull the rope.
Tug of war?
Yeah, tug of war, right? That's what it is. It's a tug of war. And it's not a matter of who's going to win, but it's a matter of having a positive outcome on both sides.
Yeah, very much mindset. And so I think part of the challenge is, let's just say in the U.S., we have this battle of the sexes that's sort of underneath. When men and women come together, there's this competition against one another. There's this protectiveness. And so, you know, people hold their cards close to their vest. I don't want to let them know what I really want. Like there are all these games that go on, and then you're actually attempting to have a relationship, and you know this thing people call love. I mean, how do you do that if you have all these conflicting conversations going on in your head before you even meet them?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very difficult, and you can't. You know, and part of that is about focus. You know, it's and it's mindfulness. It's being in the moment. You know, it's being conscious of what you put out to other people and how you affect other people.
Right. And I think the other thing is people don't ask questions that they really want to ask.
Mm-hmm.
So they never really get to learn the person. They think, oh, well, just time will tell everything. And then you have interpretations. So if you could see it this way, two things. The choice of a spouse, significant other, is the most important choice you make in your life because that's the person who will influence and affect every aspect of your life. You go to bed with them every night. They affect where you're going to live. They affect how they support where you work, if you have children, how you raise them, how you feel when you wake up in the morning, all of that, they affect that. So
right.
The second part is, because it's so important, you have a right to decide who you invite into your life.
Right.
So it seems like we put more effort into interviews for people in a company than we do for interviews for someone who comes into our life.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
You could say it's the culture, right? You shouldn't ask all these questions. Time will tell. People will lie to you anyway, so why bother asking? A little bit of a defeatist mindset. Sometimes people don't believe they have a right to ask. They should be lucky to have someone in their life, so don't rock the boat kind of thing. There's a lot going on. But I think the ugly one is people, they believe that, well, they're going to lie to you anyway, so why bother asking?
Right. And that's not always the case either. I mean, that's just an assumption. And again, you can't assume for everything and everyone across the board. It's not giving anyone a fair chance.
Right, correct. So I talk about something else in the book that relates to what you just said, assumption. I talk about how everyone is listening to a radio station. So by a certain age, you're listening in your mind, you have this radio station playing, and you cannot turn it off. By a certain age,
right.
We all get it. And so that radio station can say things like, oh, Monday sucked, thank God it's Friday, people lied to you, all men cheat, all women are gold diggers. Like, this is a radio station. And so if you look at it as a radio station, depending on your environment you grew up, it could dictate which frequency your radio station is on. So that frequency not only affects your intimate relationships, it affects your career, because you have presuppositions in your personal life, and a lot of those carry right over into your professional life. So the radio station, since you can't turn it off, it's the thing that's directing you. It's telling you that people only lie. I'm going to get cheated on. I'm, you know, there are just all these conversations. And when you wake up in the morning and say, thank God it's Friday, that's just a radio station playing.
Right.
Because
you have to turn the switch.
Well, what's the difference between Friday and Wednesday and Monday and Sunday? Technically, they're just days that we arbitrarily gave names to. There's no difference. The culture, you can say the culture is like a radio station that plays in your head.
Right, exactly.
And you can't turn it off.
Right. No.
So in the book, I talk about
that. What else is in that book of yours?
Say that again?
What else is in that book of yours?
Well, I talk extensively about the radio station, because the women were like, well, I'll just change stations. And it's like, that's just going to be the same thing, different day. When people say, you know, it's the same thing, different day. And that radio station doesn't matter if you were born and raised in China, Korea or Brazil, like, your language and culture doesn't matter. Everyone gets the radio station. It's part of your language. It gets built right into it. So I talk about how to address that. But it takes the length of the book. The book is kind of written like a manual. Technically, the book is a corporate training manual, because it talks about conflict resolution, client relationships, collaboration, negotiation, listening, like how you listen or the fact you don't, effective communication, prejudgments. All of these things are in the book, and they're all they're all very important in corporations. But what I did is I, instead of writing about corporations, I wrote it about a topic that maybe 95 or 99% of the population can relate to. It's relationships. And so it's transferable from relationship to your corporate life. All of those things that you need to be effective at work are in the book.
Right. So we have another caller.
Okay.
Area code 206. Area code 206, would you like to identify yourself?
206,
hello?
You're live and on the air with the Creative Alchemist. What's your name and where are you calling from? And maybe 206 just wants to listen. They're shy.
Yeah, they may just want to listen. Okay, 206, you can stay and listen.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. So, yes, you were telling us, I got a little distracted by the caller and excited.
No,
thank you very much.
That's okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, we were talking about what else was in your book.
Well, I take on some tough topics. I talk about sex. I talk about the whole courting and how people engage one another and some of the games that backfire, how they can, how some things that people believe are fun and exciting create dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. Right. They do.
But people don't see that because they think they're having a great time.
Do you think people enjoy playing games or withholding communication?
If they think they're winning?
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps they
do. So that competitive nature plays into it.
I actually even talked about a little bit, just a little bit of neuroscience, right? So sometimes people can get what we call a dopamine rush, you know, and it feels good when your brain secretes dopamine. And so people can get dopamine rushes from playing games or trying to mess up the mind of the person, you know, they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And that ends up turning into dysfunction because they are, they're getting, it's almost like being a drug addict, you know, you're getting your dopamine hit.
Right.
And so
that
good feeling is more valuable than having a healthy relationship.
Right.
And other times,
so,
go ahead. So.
No, go ahead. Other times.
Well, this is something that, you know, in your profession you talk about is repeating your childhood. So sometimes people don't go, it's not that they want to play games. They grew up in an environment where that was part of the home life. And that's how they're educated to engage someone they are interested in. And they're just repeating what they were taught at home. They just repeat their childhood and live out the same thing their parents did.
Right. Yeah, because we live what we learn.
Correct. And we don't see it that way, but we are literally repeating what our childhood, what we inherited as a child.
Right. Yep, that's very true. Always we carry in, you know, what we learned to how we live. I mean, we don't know any better unless you look for changes.
Well, and you have to be unwilling to do the work to unlearn that mindset so that you're not stuck. Otherwise, you don't even see that you're stuck because you're getting something out of it, right? So if you're getting a dopamine rush to your, as far as you're concerned, you're getting something out of it, like you're winning.
Right. Yep. And that, too, is true.
So
very much so.
Willing to do the work and You know, in doing the work, you know, listen, you can read lots of great books. One of the challenges of only reading the book, and it's why I offer this to corporations so I can do workshops in them, is oftentimes people are, their radio station that's playing in their head is giving them an interpretation of what they're reading. And sometimes that's a misinterpretation. So the book is a great resource to reinforce the work you do and have a much clearer understanding of what you're reading, and it makes it easier to implement. And that's why I like interviews like this, so people can actually ask, you know, the tough questions or get clarity on certain things.
Right. So with only a few minutes left, how can people reach you again?
Sure. They can find me in any social media, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Ted Santos. I think Instagram is Santos Ted, Santos underscore Ted. My email is tsantos@turnaroundip.com, and IP is like intellectual property. And if you reach out to me, and you're looking to order books for your company so everyone can read and develop a new language of transformation and producing breakthroughs in your ability to communicate and resolve conflict, that you all can take on bigger and more rewarding and fulfilling projects with less stress. Less stress. Less drain, less work. You know, people say work smarter, not harder. You know, these are some of the outcomes that you can look forward to having.
Exactly. And what's the name of your? And what's the name of your book?
Here's Why You Can't Find Love.
And it's written by Ted Santos.
Yes,
and you can find it on Amazon and what were the other ones you said?
Kobo, Barnes & Noble. It's on any digital form. It's like lots of people are carrying it. It should be inside of the brick and mortar stores, Barnes & Noble. You should find it there.
Also. So is it in the brick and mortar stores?
It should be there, yes.
Oh, cool. So it's not just, an ebook, right? It's also a hard copy?
Oh, this is a hard copy. I mean, yes, Kindle, you know, I know someone who bought it on Kindle as an electronic version, but most of the people who I know who have it have the physical book. You know, they've sent me pictures of it. So, yes, if we were on video, I would show people the book in the camera, but we don't have that. So.
Right. But they can go on to Blog Talk Radio, Creative Alchemist, and see the picture.
Right. Actually, I was going to – right. So we posted the picture of the book, correct? That is correct.
Yes, with the link, correct.
Just a quick story about the cover of the book. So my publisher did a great job providing me with illustrator. And the cover of the book, it says, of course, here's why you can't find love. And right down the center is a brick wall. And on each side of the brick wall is a man and the other side is a woman. And they're both holding their heart in their hand because that's the way it appears many people are in relationships, right? They've got their heart in their hand. They want love. They want this great relationship. I think most people want to have a great relationship, get married, and whether they have children or not, that's up to them. But it's like they're holding their heart in their hand, and the only thing stopping them from connecting is this brick wall. And so in the book, I talk about how people build their own brick wall and how there's saboteur behavior and there's a mindset and there are blind spots. And so if you can dismantle your brick wall, you can often find the person on the other side of the wall. And sometimes that person is someone you're already married to or in a relationship with.
Right.
Or someone you met and you just sort of blew off.
Right.
Or and even if you haven't met them, they may be standing on the other side of the wall and they can't get to you because you are unapproachable. You know, you think relationships don't work, so why bother? And all of that becomes part of your bricks in a wall. Like you get your question about culture. If you look at culture as being a network of conversation, and each of those bricks can represent different conversations that can sabotage a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, Ted, this has been quite the informational session.
Thank you.
Definitely a little bit different. Definitely applies to business and running a business, right? And it's also helpful in relationships. It's a different way of looking at relationships. I know I can't wait to get my book. And I want to thank our listeners for sharing with us and for being here. Thank you. And thank you, Ted. And just as a last minute, this is the last week to donate to my fundraiser, and I will not be on next week. So everybody, if you want to join me on our Zoom to congratulate the winner, I'm praying it's me. And praying. I'm putting it out there, so help me. So, yeah. But, yeah, so it was, you know, great to hear from you, and thank you again. I'm looking forward to reading it.
That's great, Sam. Look forward to your feedback. But Lori, just so people will know, next week you won't be here. I'll be here, and we have a guest already planned for next week. So
yes, you do. Yep.
So I'll be here if you want.
Exactly. Ted will be there, and we'll have the email sent out as we always do. And all, you know, the guests will be on that. So we'll keep that as a surprise.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, so thank you. And I look forward to hearing from you. And everybody, help me out and help me win.
You got it. Good luck to you. Thanks to all the callers who dialed in and the listeners who've been listening shyly in your computer. So thank you, everyone.
Yes.
And have a great evening.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, everyone. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Bye.